May 22nd, 2001. Outside the men's maximum security penitentiary at Rudyard, Jillian had a final cigarette. She kept her back to the prison and instead surveyed the pretty Midwestern street of small frame houses. Arthur was still in his fancy automobile, speaking on the car phone to his office. "My robber baron against your robber baron," was how he described his practice on the drive down, but he seemed given over to it, soothing clients and plotting strategy in the fierce war of words that was civil litigation. For Jillian's sake, Arthur had left his carnivorous young associate back in the IBM building. Rocketing along the highway, he had told her what he'd learned about Erno Erdai, the prisoner they were going to see. As Arthur's call wore on, Jillian ground her cigarette into the gravel of the lot and checked herself over in the reflection of the car's smoked windows. She'd worn a black David Dark pantsuit with a cardigan-style jacket, pearls, and gold button earrings. "You look great, as usual," Arthur said now, standing up from the car. She sensed in him, as with so many males, a hint of tireless sexual appetite. But she was largely inured to men. She thanked him for his kindness and turned to face the institution, summoning resolve. Inside the guardhouse, Arthur did the talking. The plan was for her to visit alone with Erdai, who was expecting her, in the hope he would agree to see Raven next. She was not sure exactly what faced her, but the police reports and other documents Arthur had shown her made Erdai's story sound uncomfortably like hers. He'd worked his way up from police cadet to a significant executive position at TN, and then, in an inexplicable instant, had lost hold of everything. In February of 1997, Erdai had been at Ike's, a well-known hangout for police officers, when he'd had a run-in with a man named Pharaoh Cole. According to Erdai's statements afterwards, he had once investigated Cole for a ticket fraud against the airline. Described as a black male, about 30, Cole had entered the tavern and displayed a gun, shouting that it was Erdai's fault he was broke. Several cops in the place had come at Cole with weapons drawn, and the man had thrown his arms in the air, still holding the revolver, but by the barrel, not the trigger. Finally, after brief negotiations, he'd handed the gun to Erdai and agreed to go outside with him to talk. No more than 5 minutes later, Cole had burst back through the door of the bar. By all accounts, Erdai, who was about 5 feet behind him, dropped the young man with a single shot through the back. Erdai claimed, improbably, that the shooting was self-defense, but he found little support, especially in light of the ballistics and path reports. Erno was charged with attempt murder. Cole, who recovered, conceded through an attorney that he had been stoned and provocative, and even made no objection to Erno's lawyer's plea for leniency. But because Erdai had shot and killed his mother-in-law several decades before, the PA's office was adamant that he'd already had his second chance. Erdai pled to ag battery, firearm, and received a sentence of 10 years, which would have gotten him out in 5 had he not developed a stage 4 cancer of the lung. Erdai was going to die in here, a thought that seemed fully appalling to Jillian as she waited on a bench beside Arthur. "Is he still lucid?" Jillian asked Raven. "According to the medical staff." Her name was called then. "I guess you're going to see for yourself?" "I guess so," she answered and stood. So far as Jillian could tell, Erdai was Rami Gandalf's last hope. Arthur came to his feet to wish her good luck. Then Jillian headed off in the company of a female correctional officer, a stout chatterbox named Ruthie. In his infirmary bed, Erdai was thin and pale. When his light eyes came up, they lingered on Jillian before he coughed harshly. After he recovered, he extended his hand. "I'll just leave you to talking," Ruthie said. She did not actually depart. She found a plastic bucket chair for Jillian, then crossed to the other side of the ward, where she made some show of looking in the other direction. "I don't suppose you remember me from being in your court," Erdai asked, "now that you see me?" It seemed important to him to think he had made an impression, but she saw no need for gallantry. "No, I'm sorry." "Well, I remember you. So, you want to hear my story?" Jillian explained about Arthur. She'd come because it seemed important to Erna, but it was the defense lawyer who was better suited to listen to whatever he had to say.
You think I should talk to him?
He's a nice man. I think he'd be fair. If you have information that would tend to show Gandalf shouldn't be executed, Arthur should hear it.
Yeah, I got the information.
Erno laughed. He didn't do it.
Gandalf?
He's innocent, Erdai said flatly, and watched her at length.
You don't believe that, do you?
No, Jillian said. She could not accept that all of them, Molto and Muriel and the detective, Starchek, even Ed Murkowski, the defense lawyer, who'd privately acknowledged believing Gandalf was guilty, could be so thoroughly misled.
I wouldn't either, said Erno,
and his light eyes, trapped in their weathered sockets, again stayed on her quite some time.
All right, he said. Go tell the lawyer. I'll see him.
The conversation was done. Erno never bothered looking at her again as she said goodbye.